from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about the new Tangerine Film Food and Fashion event from the crew that created Orange.
I'll get a preview of the Shining Light Film Festival.
And I'll talk with poet Norbert Kropf about his new book. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. You know about Orange, that music and art extravaganza in September, but have you heard about Tangerine? Well, Sharon Gamble invited Ryan Hickey to our studio to learn about the newest mashup from the brains behind Orange.
Okay, so Tangerine is a little, what are we saying, a little brother or a little sister of Orange? I'm saying sister because of that sassy redhead you have as part of the promotional materials.
Yeah, we can call it a little sister.
Okay. So before we talk about Tangerine, I just want to talk for a moment about Orange. I can't believe it's been 12 years already. You're getting ready for a lucky 13.
Yeah, I don't know if I can believe that either, but we've made it this far.
When you set out to create Orange, did you have any sense of its longevity, or was it just, let's do this once and see what happens?
It was most definitely a let's do this once and see what happens. I had absolutely no idea that we would still be doing it today. It was, it was really just an idea to kind of have a cool gathering of artists and, music, I guess musicians and friends who supported that type of thing, and to really just encourage people that really at the time just that we were close to and connected to explore kind of the avant-garde side of art and music for one night in Indy and just kind of take them out of their comfort zones and sort of their normal circuit of entertainment options on a weekend. And that was really all we intended to do, was to try that once and see what happened. So,
for somebody who hasn't had the experience of coming to an Orange, why don't you describe what it is?
Sure. It's a little bit, it has kind of some elements of an art fair and a music festival and kind of old warehouse parties. And when we actually did the event in old warehouses, it felt a little bit more like that. For the last few years, we've held the event at the state fairgrounds in one of their buildings. But essentially, what people can expect is just kind of a wide variety of contemporary artists, sort of emerging talent, both in visual arts and music. On the music side, you're not going to see cover bands in top 40. You're going to really see all original music and a lot of local, some regional bands and some DJs, and just a real up-tempo kind of multi-sensory, party atmosphere.
It's a really fun sort of destination to go with a bunch of friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pack of people. Just yep. Get the girlfriends, get the couples together and just go.
Yes, and we have a lot of people who do that. It's kind of their, their big night out. And whether it's with a group of people like that or even just as a date night, it's definitely, it serves that purpose for many people.
Yeah. So Orange coming up in September.
Yep, September 13th will be our date this year.
Is that a Friday?
It's a Saturday.
Oh, I was going to say, lucky Friday the 13th, lucky Saturday the 13th. 13 on the, September 13th for the 13th Orange.
Exactly.
Very clever.
Yes.
So as I understand it, there were some things that you had been doing at Orange that maybe got a little overshadowed by some of the bigger elements, the bolder elements, and is that how Tangerine got birthed?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it happened. Anybody who's been to Orange knows that there's a lot going on. In many cases, I don't want to say too much, but there's more than you could possibly see in one night. You can't possibly see all the music acts, and you can't possibly see every little thing that pops up, whether it's a spontaneous dance performance or, these various things that happen at Orange. But there were a couple things in particular that were very popular at Orange, but in many ways, whether it's overshadowed or in some ways, they kind of outgrew the event and outgrew our ability to manage them effectively. And those two things were film and fashion. We had done kind of small independent film lounges at Orange over the years, really from year one, and we had done various iterations of fashion shows and fashion lounges. And both of those things really, it became clear a few years ago, needed their own home outside of Orange. And then the other thing that we had never really quite done on the level that we think it deserves is the food and beverage. Not that you can't get food and beverage at Orange, it's just not celebrating the art of it or the kind of craft movement within those categories. It's, you know, more of your standard fare and kind of drinks that you would get at a standard event and that kind of thing because of the volume and really with the focus being on the art and music, it's been, you know, great for us to operate it that way. But really between those three things and kind of a desire to do an event in the springtime, that's how Tangerine was born.
Yeah, so food, fashion, and film, the
yep.
focus. And an interesting venue that a lot of people may never have known was even available to go to events in.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a new experience for most people. The Sanctuary on Penn is an old church that's been purchased by a guy who turned it into a venue that's primarily served the wedding market. But they have done some other events there, more, you know, public or community events, and we're excited about it. It's, you know, got a lot of unique properties. It's smaller, so we can kind of start, you know, get this event off the ground with something that's a little more easy to organize and not quite on the level that Orange is today.
Sure. So as with Orange, you're focusing, you're going local. I expect we might see some of the artisanal brewers, vintners, food creators at Tangerine?
Yes, you can definitely expect to see a lot of the kind of well-known and even some of the emerging people in those categories that you just described, absolutely.
Local fashion design?
Yep.
And local film?
Yes, actually a surprising amount of film talent in this city. Typically not getting the exposure that they deserve here. We're not historically a film market, although we do have two great film festivals here. But we're not really trying to be a film festival. We're going to be showcasing film in a little bit of a different way. And frankly, I think overall the event is not intended to be another film festival or another food event that would be compared to Dig In, for example. We have some great events in this city, like the ones I mentioned, and we don't want to be another one of those events. We want to be a complement to the scene and be seen as an addition to the film scene and the food and beverage scene here and the fashion scene. And in many ways, we're accomplishing that by partnering with some of these organizations, like Pattern, for example.
Makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Yeah, great sense. So how are both, and this is a question both for Orange and for Tangerine, mm-hmm. how are you finding your artists? Are they finding you, especially now that both you and Orange, that's a you plural, and Orange mm-hmm. have such a reputation? Are you still kind of having to go out and say, okay, so who do you know? Who's hot? Who's emerging in this field?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We're lucky that our reputation and our brand that's kind of out there and known for being associated with and for providing a great platform for artists, it attracts a certain amount of talent that comes to us. So the thing that we've done for several years with Orange and that we've done this year with Tangerine is we have a submission period where artists, creators, et cetera, can submit their work for consideration. We then evaluate that, determine who's a good fit. Some are maybe just not what we're looking for, or just not appropriate for the particular event, or maybe we, in many cases, as with Orange, we just simply don't have the room to accommodate everybody based on the volume that we get. With Tangerine, we've definitely had some great people who've come to us through that process, and we've also gone out and kind of spread the word and tried to identify people either through just individual efforts or through, like I mentioned, partnerships with organizations like Pattern and through some conversations with the Indie Film Fest to identify some people that maybe we're not connected to or that we weren't going to get connected to in the short amount of time.
Sure. So while it would be terrific for our listeners to go out for all 4 days mm-hmm. of Tangerine, if they have to choose, you've got some kind of theme nights. So Wednesday the 16th, Craft Cocktail Bartending Competition Finals. Yep. So you've had some preliminary rounds before
yep.
that, right?
Yep.
And then the Underground Film Lounge. How many films showing that night?
Well, we're still kind of finalizing that. What you're going to find is we have actually one kind of feature presentation that we're hopefully finalizing and announcing in the next couple of days.
Cool.
We're almost there, and we're really excited about making that announcement. I'll just say that it goes very well with the theme that night.
okay.
And other than that, we have a variety of kind of short presentations and, you know, it's not going to be a type of environment where you sit and watch, you know, full-length films throughout the night. You're going to see kind of short, just shorts and, you know, content that kind of goes for a little bit where there's breaks and people can kind of stay moving around. And obviously there will be alcohol being served, so people will want to take trips to the bars and things like that. But the idea on Wednesday night is that there'll be the craft cocktail competition and then kind of a break, and then we'll kind of move into the film portion so we can keep those two things separate and give them both the attention they deserve.
Excellent. Thursday night has my full attention because it sounds like the big foodie night.
Yes. Yeah. So Thursday is going to be our beer tapping where we have a lot of the craft brewers involved, and then the gourmet row with just a variety of restaurants and chefs. And in some cases, the brewers and the chefs being paired together to do some things that are going to be pretty special. So I'm definitely excited about that. And I think our food and beer community will be equally as excited.
Excellent. And Friday night, the Tangerine Fashion Parade.
Yes, we actually have a fashion parade. And part of the idea there is that we wanted to stay away from kind of the traditional and what's been done before and do some things that are different. So a fashion parade certainly is different from what you might normally find. We have some people who are organizing that are experienced in not only organizing fashion events, but doing fashion events with Orange. So we're very excited about that. We also have a pop-up boutique that's going to be open every night, and it's going to have various fashion vendors that will be selling items in that as well. So.
Oh, sweet. Bring some spending money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Saturday night is kind of the culmination of it all.
Exactly. Saturday night's the main event, Tangerine. It'll be a little bit of everything, a lot of kind of feasts for the eyes, and just a combination of fashion, film, food, and beverage all taking place that one night.
Hey, Ryan, what's your background? How did you get started being an event promoter?
I got started with zero experience in event planning.
Like, bless your heart.
Yeah, like many people in many industries, they just sort of ended up doing it. I graduated from IU and moved back to Indy and really had a desire to get into real estate and entrepreneurship.
Really?
Yep. Kind of did that for a while, was a real estate broker. I did residential real estate with a company up in Carmel. And then I started to realize that my passion was in another area. Sort of at the same time when I first moved back here, I was starting to DJ, and I had always been involved with music, and I sang in high school and college and was had studied music and was passionate about music pretty much my whole life. And I picked up DJing, learned how to mix records, and was kind of experimenting with turntables and using those as an instrument and performing with bands and doing different things like that. And at the same time, we kind of had this idea for Orange, and as DJing and Orange sort of evolved over the years, I became less interested in that being a side gig and more interested in it being kind of what I do. Frankly, doing Orange that first year and sort of learning the mistakes and what went well and what didn't go well was my...
That's your MBA.
That was my education in event planning.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. That's how it all got started.
Any regrets?
I try not to have any. I'll put it that way. I mean, you look back and you think, man, if we could have done this differently, you know, and if we could have maybe approached things a little bit differently, maybe we'd be in a different position than we are now. But, you know, the truth is I think particularly not having any background in it, the mistakes that we made and the lessons we learned brought us to the point we're at today. And I think you could probably say that about anything in life.
And you know. And there's always, you know, next year. You know, incorporate
absolutely
all the new stuff you learned in the next year's orange or in tangerine.
And that's pretty much what we've done every year is kind of take our our thoughts and feedback and reflections from a given year and our mistakes and just apply them to next year and make sure that we just do better every time. And for the most part, I think we have improved our process every year. We've certainly learned a lot over the years in doing this. And, you know, really, we've developed some great relationships. And without those, there is no orange or tangerine. So that's, you know, when we first started doing this, again, we had no event planning experience. We had no funding. We had no, boss or company that was telling us that this was our assignment. It was just an idea, and we learned how to do it. But we learned how to add great components to it just simply by approaching people and developing great relationships.
Sharon Gamble with Ryan Hickey, co-founder and executive director of Orange, parent of Tangerine. Tangerine is coming up the third week of April with film, food, fashion, and more at the Sanctuary on Pennsylvania Street in downtown Indy. To learn more, look for Tangerine, that's Tangerine with a J, of course, on Facebook.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. In its second year, the Shining Light Film Festival features films with mental health as the focus to shine a light on mental health awareness. Travis DiNicola spoke with Richard Propes and C.J. Sirocki, the film project director for the festival, about this year's event.
C.J., Richard, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to have you here, and congratulations on the second year of the festival. It must have means that the first one went well, right?
Yes, the first one went very well. We had 734 in attendance, and that's not bad for a first year.
That's great. That is really great. You know, it's interesting. We were just talking, in fact, before we went on the air about there's so many great film festivals going on right now in central Indiana, and it's really great to see some really interesting films that are being brought in. Yours is a very unique one, though, really focusing on bringing awareness to mental health issues. Tell me how this one came about.
Jackie Pittman, who's my co-director, and I had an idea. We had worked on a project with consumers of mental health doing a play, and both of us loved film, and we figured what a great mode to explore mental health issues, mm-hmm. show that recovery is possible, decrease stigma. And so we really had this brainstorm, and we received a grant to do our first year, and they renewed the grant to do the second year. This year's focus is a little different. We're still focusing on mental health, but the first night we're focusing on stigma, issues around stigma.
Okay.
And the rest of the festival is focusing on children's mental health and youth mental health. So it's and youth empowerment. So
yeah, I noticed that theme. That seems to be more of a topic of conversation, recognizing that the children and teenagers are often dealing with mental health issues as well.
Yeah, it's surprising the number of teenagers and youth that are dealing with mental health issues is, I think it's being diagnosed more.
Yeah.
And as schools become more aware of mental health issues, they're coming more to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly it's about awareness, and that's what what Shining Light does is shine a light and bring up awareness on this issue. So some really interesting movies that you've selected. Richard, I know you were a part of the selection committee.
Yes, I was.
Yes. So I want to talk about a couple of these that are going to be shown over the 3 days of the festival. I know that the first night it opens with one called End Stigma. Excuse me, CJ.
Actually, that's it's actually a short film. It's only 7 minutes.
I think so.
Okay.
And a poet from London, actually, she came up with this short film, and it's actually a fundraiser in the United Kingdom for a foundation to reduce stigma.
Okay.
And so she has these six poems that she wrote that she has performed by different actresses. And herself has a bipolar disorder, and they were written at different periods of time. both at lows and highs. And so it's really fascinating because you're hearing these poems, yet there's no clue as to who has a mental illness, who doesn't have a mental illness. You know, it's very much about human emotion.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about some of the other films of the festival, some of the longer ones, including one that I'm real curious about, The Holding Cell. This is about a teenage girl in Sarasota, Florida.
You know, we really wrestled with that one. I think we kind of debated back and forth. It's a really powerful film.
Mm-hmm. Tell me why you wrestled with it.
We had kind of, when we received the two films that we're showing on Saturday that are centered around, one is the Dutch mental health system and one is the mental health system for children in Tennessee and the Dutch mental health system for children. We kind of went with this youth focus, and so we wanted to touch youth addiction. But there were several other films that I wanted to put in, and it became a choice of time slots.
So what makes this film a strong film?
For me, it makes a strong film from the standpoint of how easy it is to get wrapped up in the drug scene as a youth and how easy it is to get into a situation where you're in trouble and, you know, how quickly you can get into the prison system or the jail system.
Sure.
And it really kind of takes somebody stepping in to say, you know, you have a choice here.
Mm-hmm. Another film that you're showing, this is an Australian one, and it's titled Three Mates, Seven Seas. And I know the basic sort of premise is that it's three Australian guys who want to go surfing in all the seven seas. But what does this one have to do with mental health? Other than that sounds like a crazy idea. But.
Actually, what happened was one of the first guy, I forget his name right now, but he had the idea that he wanted to do something to prevent youth suicide because they live kind of in a rural area where there's not a lot of opportunity. It's kind of farm country. And he kind of came up with his own 4 or 5 step plan as to how to combat this whole idea of suicide being an option. And
so their journey to try to surf in the seven seas was to raise awareness for anti-suicide?
Yeah, raise awareness against youth suicide. And they wanted to show that their first step in their plan that they kind of promulgated was dream big. Mm-hmm. And so they had this big dream. And they had this website where they communicated back and forth with people as they were, and this was before Facebook, where they communicated back and forth. So when they were in a low position, their website, the comments they were getting from their website helped them to go on with their big dream.
Then
the opposite, you know, they got several messages on their website about kids that had been motivated to do something bigger because they had seen what these guys were doing.
Nice, nice.
This is also one of those films, if I can add that.
Please.
You know, some people think about a mental health film festival and they think it's going to be a downer. They think it's going to be really intense. And this is a really entertaining film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a film that gets its message across, but does it in a way that is also very audience friendly.
Well, that's kind of why I brought that one up, because this one does look like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
actually,
it is.
You know, and looks like, you know, like three fun dudes like hanging out and surfing. And
it's a blast, but they get their point across too, which I think is awesome.
That's very cool.
My favorite scene in the film is when they're trying to surf the Arctic Ocean. So
it sounds like that one's worth seeing. There we go.
Yep.
So, Richard, tell me, if you would, we've got time for just a little bit more. What's another film that you really hope people get a chance to see?
You know, I think for me, my favorite film, I'm going to just be honest, is Alien Boy.
Okay, tell me about Alien Boy. That's a that one was made in the United States, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that is about a gentleman on the West Coast who, you know, we're getting more and more cases in the press of individuals with mental illness who are misinterpreted by police. And, you know, they either get arrested, they end up in the prison systems, or they end up, like this gentleman, being killed.
Yeah.
Because they were acting out in a way that the police didn't understand, or they weren't trained well enough to understand, or the police just didn't take the time to understand.
Sure.
It's a very emotional film. It's a very powerful film. It was a film that we actually kind of stumbled across. It had been I run a film website called The Independent Critic, and it had actually been submitted for review.
Okay.
And I just thought, this is an opening night film.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of began a correspondence. I think it really captures a lot of what the festival's about, of breaking the stigma, of having these really difficult conversations.
And as you said, I mean, Alien Boy, I mean, it's sort of a full-length film, 90 minutes.
Yes.
And that'll be opening on the first night of the festival?
It is an opening night film. Yes.
On Thursday the 24th.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good.
Travis DiNicola with the second annual Shining Light Film Festival's film project director C.J. Sirocki and Richard Probst. The festival takes place at the Central Library from April 24th through the 26th, and more information can be found at shininglightfilmfest.org, shininglightfilmfest.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what T.S. Eliot said?
Well,
leaves it so wide open, doesn't it?
What did T.S. Eliot say?
April is the cruelest month.
I was thinking something about Practical
Cats. Out of the dead land. And what Practical Cats applies to. It's about time for the spring crop of kittens.
Yeah, but April is the cruelest month.
But we have some distinctively, definitely non-cruel events on our calendar we call.
What do we do?
What
that's
do you got?
Right. Well, you know what? Actually, here's a great event that's going on tonight at the Jazz Kitchen. Shows at both 7 and 9:30. Kenny Phelps, who's an absolutely amazing jazz drummer, has pulled together a whole bunch of local jazz musicians for a very inspirational gospel jazz experience. And there's going to be a whole bunch of people sitting in with him, everyone from Cynthia Lane and Rob Dixon and Steve Ali and Jesse Whitman, and the list goes on and on and on. There's about 20 different musicians, jazz musicians in town that have said they're going to sit in during at least one of the sets. Tickets are available, but there are just a few left. 7 and 9:30 tonight at the Jazz Kitchen.
Big 20th anniversary.
Yeah, it's part of their
continues
big,
rolling
I know,
on, doesn't
it's been
it?
A great celebration for them.
And yummy food, too, and a nice bar.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Travis or I have ever...
No.
Hey, speaking of great music, the River Roots Music and Folk Arts Festival is coming up again on the banks of the Ohio in historic Madison, Indiana, which just celebrated a special anniversary all to itself. The festival takes place on Friday and Saturday, May 16th and 17th. I'm telling you now, so you can go online, just Google River Roots Music and Folk Arts Festival. Just River Roots Festival will get you there. Look for housing packages, camping accommodations. But here's why you're going. There's food. There's great microbrew beer. And all kinds of music on multiple stages. Musical acts include Jenny DeVoe, The Black Lilies, St. Paul and the Broken Bones. How could you not want to see St. Paul and the Broken Bones?
Sounds good.
Rusted Roots and the Troubadours of Divine Bliss. And, of course, local nearby native son Tim Grimm and his band. And, as they say, much, much more. River Roots Music and Folk Arts Festival, Madison, Indiana, May 16th and 17th. Be there or be square.
That sounds great.
Yep.
Hey, next weekend, this is kind of a fun event down in Greenwood at the Greenwood Barnes & Noble. They're having a fundraiser for the Garfield Park Shakespeare Company. This is taking place on Saturday the 19th from 1 to 6 p.m. And they're going to have different actors from the Garfield Park Shakespeare Company performing, doing stage combat. You can also learn, there'll be a special class on Shakespearean insults. You can take home seedlings and plants mentioned in the plays. There'll be all sorts of different performances and stuff for kids as well, including face painting and hair braiding and all sorts of other fun Shakespearean related things. Again, 1 to 6 at the Barnes & Noble in Greenwood next weekend.
I did not know Shakespeare braided his hair. Learned
or
something,
painted his
or
face.
Or painted his face. That explains
a little bit of a stretch,
so much. Speaking of literate things, the Hendricks County Literacy Summit is coming up next Thursday. That's April 17th from 2 to 4 at the Plainfield Guilford Township Public Library. And it's an afternoon packed with reasons why literacy is important to Hendricks County. The keynote speaker is
fabulously entertaining Phil Gulley. If you have any relationship with public broadcasting in Central Indiana, you know what a great speaker Phil Gulley is. You can find out more actually at IndyReads.org. IndyReads.org for the Hendricks County Literacy Summit, which is next Thursday afternoon.
Okay, I'm going to continue the literacy theme here.
All right.
This afternoon at 2 o'clock out at Book Mamas in Irvington, Julie Young is going to be launching her new book, as well as there's also going to be music involved for her first young adult novel, 15 Minutes of Fame. It's about a 15-year-old girl's rise to rock and roll stardom. And this will be taking place with a signing and discussion and some music in their Underground 9 studio out at Book Mamas today at 2 p.m.
Love it. Hey, if you're hearing us on Thursday night, don't forget tomorrow night, that's the 11th at 7:30 at the Schrott Center for the Performing Arts. The Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra will be performing on the program works by Strauss and Mozart, and also the world premiere of a commission from Indianapolis native James Aikman. It's called Triptych Musical Momentum, and it ties together the themes of fables, fairy tales, physics, and in this case, the family that is the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Family with a PH, right?
Yeah, right, of course.
And don't forget, lots of great Butler Arts Fest events going on throughout this weekend. Just go online to butlerartsfest.com for everything you can still go to see, do, hear, and enjoy.
Another great event to put on your calendar for April 26th, that's Saturday night, a full production of Swan Lake that is being produced by the Ballet Theater of Carmel. And they're going to be doing this one show only at the Westfield High School Auditorium, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday the 26th, Swan Lake.
Hey, there might still be some fabulous tickets left for the 2014 Indie Reads Alphabet Affair coming up Saturday, April 26th, brought to you by the letter P. I feel like I should be on our sister station, TV20.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Brought to you by the letter P. Photographer, paralegal, pastor, peacock, patriarch, poet, a pauper, a pawn, or a king.
Nice.
Sorry. You don't actually,
in the spirit of it.
You don't have to go in a costume. You can just do ordinary sort of black tie attire. But why would you miss the opportunity to do something fun? Indiana Landmarks fundraiser is the same night, Travis, or I'd be at the door of your fundraiser to see who figures out how to go as a pineapple, which is one of the suggestions on your invitation this year. Take pictures for me, will
I'm
you?
Looking forward to seeing that pineapple. A dancing
looking
pineapple.
Forward, PH.
Forward, PH.
Forward.
Hey, last thing that I've got, Sharon, just a quick heads up. If you haven't had a chance to see the exhibit of Anila Aga's work at Gallery 924, that's the Arts Council's gallery, really interesting exhibit, especially I loved Murmurations, which is an installation that uses shadows. Basically, these small thorns from a hawthorn tree are sort of stuck into the wall, and you get this real great sense of flight. It's kind of like the pattern of flock of birds, and the way that the shadows are done are just brilliant and really a cool piece worth seeing.
Yeah, great First Friday recently. Hey, my last item, if you haven't been to see the Ansel Adams show at the Idle Jorg yet, go on their website before you go and plan to be there during some of the amazing programming they have lined up, including on next Saturday, that's the 19th at 2 o'clock, Indianapolis professional photographer Lyle Manweiler will recount his adventures in Yosemite with Ansel Adams and others while taking you on a tour through the Ansel Adams exhibition. So idlejorg.org is how to get more information about that. And as I say, lots of great programming.
Very good. Sharon, we got a
scoot.
Scoot. But we'll be back next week with more on that counter recall.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Poet Norbert Croft has used his skills as a writer to celebrate life, have fun, memorialize, and discover all sorts of nuances about the world around him. But our former Indiana poet laureate plumbed new deaths with his latest collection, Catholic Boy Blues, A Poet's Journal of Healing. Sharon Gamble invited Norbert to tell us how this deeply personal collection poured out of him. A warning, please, if you do have younger children, you'll want to turn your radio down for about the next 14 minutes.
So this is prologue, Angel of Power and Protection. There's a little head note that says statue on the bridge to Vatican City, Rome. And this was inspired by a photograph by Dennis Kelly of Indianapolis in a series of his on sacred places. So, Angel of Power and Protection. What happens when the angel falls asleep after the mother and father who held the baby have to walk back into their lives? And the boy walks out into the world, and a servant of God molests him when the parents aren't looking. By the time he is ready to cross the bridge to Vatican City, his feet will not move forward, but turn in the opposite direction, and it is decades before he can approach the old God by finding his own sacred places and a new language for praying.
So anybody who's heard our conversations before or certainly read your poetry knows that your spiritual life imbues everything you write.
Yes, I would say so.
You've been a poet for how many years now?
43.
43 years.
Yeah.
The majority of your life.
Yes. Well, four-sevenths.
Okay. That works. How did these poems come to you? How did the poems that make up Catholic Boy Blues come to you? And I know there were many more that didn't make it into the book.
Oh, yes.
What unlocked that door?
Well, there were several things. I believe moving back to Indiana had something to do with it. When I was on the East Coast, I didn't have those associations with the childhood. I did write a lot of poems about childhood.
Mm-hmm.
In poems and in my childhood memoir, The Ripest Moments. But as I came to see, partly through the help of a skilled therapist, is that what I was doing in many of those poems was identifying and preserving what had been positive in those early years and in that community and so on and so forth. And in a way, the writing of my childhood memoir, I finished that after we moved here in 04. I did that in the fall of 04 and early 05.
After 30-some years on Long Island?
Yeah, 34 years on Long Island. I had started it 7 years before, right after my mother died, and we sold our house and property in Jasper, Indiana. But there was a chapter in that in which I talked about going squirrel hunting with my father as a ritual every Labor Day weekend, and we invited the parish priest to come with us. And I think my father must have invited him. I don't think I did. We would go to my great aunt's farm in little St. Henry, Indiana, where my dad grew up. And the priest came along, and he liked all kinds of hunting, and he had taken me hunting before, but he didn't behave very well. And it was clear to me, and as I was writing this experience down, that he was not a good mentor. And I scolded him for being a good mentor. And I showed this chapter, as I showed all of them, to Catherine. They were short chapters. She said, boy, she knew about the abuse, but no details. She said, boy, you really gave it to him, didn't you? And I said, oh, I did. And I looked back at it, and the whole chapter was a metaphor for the sexual abuse.
Mm.
You know, so I said in there, I assumed a sort of a Huck Finn voice, and I said, you know, this is, I've kept this quiet for 50 years, but sometimes it's like what Jim decided to decide whether he was going to stay with Huck, whether he was going to stay with Jim and protect him or turn him in.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, all right, I'll go to hell. I'll do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of quoted that, and there it was. And that was the doorway into these poems. They came. Well, it was still 2 years later, and there were some other things about what I read in the newspaper. And there was a priest from Indianapolis who was shuffled from one parish to another, and then he was sent to southern Indiana, just across the border from my county in Spencer County, where the Kropp family came in the 1840s.
Mm.
And that just brought it too close to home, and
mm-hmm.
that was a trigger. Yeah.
You're a person of deep faith, as evidenced by your
poetry.
Yeah,
I've been an uneasy Catholic ever since this happened, but yes,
I'm sure.
The spiritualism in my poems comes out of Catholic history. One can see that, I think. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean there wasn't struggle.
No, it doesn't mean that. You're right. It does not mean there wasn't
struggle. That's an understatement.
That's an understatement. Yeah, there were 20 years when I almost couldn't go into a church after high school. Mm. Yeah. And I went to St. Joseph's College, and then I ended up at Notre Dame. But, I mean, the whole world was changing in the 60s, and people leaving the priesthood and the nunnery and people having different ideas about Catholicism and about authority figures and all that sort of thing. So it was all in the mix, yeah. But it still remained a part of me. I mean, you could see it in the poems.
Absolutely.
So there's the imagery and the sense of spirituality in it, yeah.
Would you read Where is Jesus for us?
Where is Jesus? Where is Jesus when a priest gropes boys? What would Jesus do? What would Jesus say? Would he turn the other cheek, be a lamb mild and meek, be quick to forgive, insist you find a better way to live? Or would he turn into a lion and roar as he throws you out the door, thou shalt not defile my Father's house? Tell me, priest, tell me true, does it make you blue? Where is Jesus when you do what you do?
There's a technique in counseling where you write a letter to someone who harmed you long ago.
Yeah, whether I wrote 325 letters.
Right, whether or not they're still living or not.
Before I knew about that technique.
And we're the luckier for it. Yeah. Thank you for expressing this in poetry and not prose. You have been fascinated by the blues.
Yes.
And you've created this really unusual structure of characters who help you tell the stories that are told through this poem. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about?
Sure. I fell in love with the blues in the latter part of the 60s when I was at the University of Notre Dame. And, of course, Notre Dame isn't all that far from Chicago, which is a great center of the blues, and there were blues musicians from Chicago coming to campus and so on and so forth. So that became very important to me. And I was in love with poetry and studying poetry. This was before I started to write it. But I could see the connection between American poetry and American blues lyrics. Mm-hmm. And it excited me that they would say, I think, profound things in very simple, basic language. But you wouldn't always know that it was about, let's say, slavery or suffering that goes back that way to the, and so on and so forth. And that just stayed with me. And when we got married at Notre Dame in 1970 and moved to the East Coast to start teaching, I would sometimes play blues lyrics to my poetry students to listen to this. See this metaphor? Mm. See how deep this is? See how brilliant it is to use simple language to get into the depths? And that has always had a great influence on me as a poet. Those blues lyrics, as well as Native American poetry, too, which has a similar kind of, I don't mean to say strategy, because they don't sit around and it's their tradition and they live it and it comes through them. But it is a pure, simple language that it has this deep spiritual reality to it. Mm. Yeah.
How about to some blues mamas and papas?
Yeah. The blues were the healing agent for me primarily in this book, yeah. And it came naturally and volcanically, these four voices. I did no premeditation about how this was going to happen. You ask how they came like a volcano, all 325 of them. So anyway, to some blues, mamas, and papas. There are poems to medieval saints, too, and so on and so forth. But these are my kind of saints, too. Robert Johnson, teach me how to make a deal and save my soul at the crossroads. Bessie Smith, show me how to tell folks it ain't nobody's business what I do or say. Son House, bottleneck me to a quiet place where I can forgive and bless my abuser. Muddy Waters, get your mojo going so I can put a gree-gree on evil spirits. John Lee Hooker, boogie-woogie me to stomp my boot heel on the head of old King Snake. Charlie Patton, Help me rise to the top and swim on the surface of the waters flooding my soul. Reverend Gary Davis, pray for me, so I can bypass those who trespass against me. Sister Rosetta Thorpe, gospel me into the air, leading beyond into a heaven somewhere. Every one of those little couplets has something, it comes out of a particular song or something
right.
unique to each of those blues singers, songwriters, and
You've
guitar
got
players.
The
and
whole
so.
Pantheon of blues yeah. gods here for
it's
you.
It's a good start,
Projection.
Anyway.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them around.
So let's talk about guilt and forgiveness. You had to, through these poems, do this kind of magical act where you reach back to the boy you were so many years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Yeah.
And I have the sense that there are several poems that move that forward one tiny bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a sense in which I was always aware of being in touch with the boy that I was in my poems because there's so much childhood. And so it's connected in a way to origins also, which are deep in a broad sense of where do we come from, what influences make us the people, the individuals that we become, and so on and so forth. But that's something that is talked about a lot in therapy, but I didn't get it from therapy. I wrote, of these poems, I wrote 275 of the 325 before I ever started therapy.
Mm.
And there was all that boy talking to the man he became and all that. I just knew that.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure I heard some of it. Some of it must be in the air, too, you know, because that's part of in a way, isn't it common sense that Wordsworth says that the child is father to the man, and I quote that, yeah. So, there is a lot of that, but it just sort of came rather naturally, which is the best way for something to come, I think. If I had tried to plan this, it wouldn't have worked out, I think, probably. You know, it would have gotten too intellectual.
Right. It's what you just said about Native American poetry and the difference between strategy and tradition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Living your tradition. Yeah.
Well, I would love to have you read the whole book. That wouldn't give anybody a reason to
How
buy
long
it.
Do we have?
Well, I want you to read one more, and then I want to talk a little bit about how you're using this book to, it's been said that a poem should be the axe to break up the frozen seas within us,
mm-hmm.
and you're using these poems in that way. Could you read Symptoms for us?
Sure. Do you ever wonder why you always notice so many frowns, hear so many sighs, relate to so many people down on their luck, want to speak out against so much injustice, so often feel so easily betrayed, take on so many burdens, right so many wrongs, want to help so many people, feel responsible for what life has done to so many, but do not take the steps that will help you see you should be kinder and more respectful to the person you are and appreciate the good you have done. There are poems here and there in this large collection that mean to speak to fellow survivors of child abuse, but maybe haven't been able to come out. I don't mean that you have to declare yourself publicly, but I mean see it and sort of own up to it and then begin to deal with it in some way. You know?
Not just child abuse, but any kind of
abuse. Yes, any kind of abuse, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's no abuser named in this book, and that's no accident, although some people said, you should have named him. And I said, no, this is not a tell-all. I'm not trying to get even.
You don't need
I'm trying to write a book which is, in a way, universal about all abuse situations. It comes out of my own particular experience, yes, and that grounds it. But I want the reader, especially if there are abuse survivors among my readership, and I assume there will be, they will hear about this. I want them to be able to see their abuser, you know, and because of the pattern of abuse here. There's a certain archetype that archetypal pattern of abuse and strategies of how to, you know, the way an abuser thinks. And by the way, the last chapter in The Voice of the Priest was not my idea. That was the idea of my therapist. And I didn't like the idea at first because I didn't want to go there. I didn't think it was right. And why would I want to talk in his voice? Ugh. But she said, well, think about it. You let these other poems come. If they would want to come in that voice, would you let them? And I said, well, sure, I guess I'd have to. I thought about it for 2 days, and I said, I do know that voice. I know how he thought. I knew his stratagems. I knew his rationalizations. And I think every abused person knows his or her abuser in that way.
She let you transcend it.
Yeah. And so then I wrote these poems in the voice of the priest, and they came, and he was couldn't own up to it. He rationalized. At some point, he did show some guilt. But if he didn't face it, and if he faked it, the wonderful thing was the voice of the boy got down and dirty and really went for his throat, you know? So there you have that give and take then in the last section, yeah.
Sharon Gamble with poet Norbert Croft, author of the newly published Catholic Boy Blues, A Poet's Journal of Healing. Learn more at croftpoetry.com. That's spelled K-R-A-P-F-poetry.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out about a new art exhibit with a focus on autism.
I'll get a preview of this year's Installation Nation event.
And I'll get a preview of the annual Stutz Artist Open House. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.